Great. I'm now recording. All right, here we go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I am Jeff Gamet, sitting in for Ewan Rankin, who is just too lazy to join us tonight. Well, actually, he does have a legit excuse, although we will expect to see a doctor's note later on. He's had an incredibly busy day and was not able to get home in time to actually get everything up and running. And so I stepped in, and of course, my computer crashed right before the show. And yet, here we are, managed to get everything up and running. So go us. And we have an amazing panel, which is great because it's always great to get to hang out with all of you. So we'll start off with ladies first. Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing good. I had the day off, so it was a busy day, but I had the day off, so it's all good.
Nice.
And the weather was nice, relatively. It snowed in between, so.
Oh, well, it was it's springtime.
It was a little bit bolder weather, basically, like snow, rain, sun, like everything.
Yeah, that's literally bolder weather, which is exactly what we've had the past couple days. Yep.
The only difference is, we did not have the weird temperatures that you get. It was basically cold all day, so.
Oh, well, you know, maybe you'll get the weird temperatures mixed in at some point. Mix it up a little bit. Really feel like Colorado.
Maybe.
Yeah. Hey, Rich, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. I'm just seeing if I can book my COVID vaccine online.
Oh, God. Cool.
I'm not old enough yet.
Live COVID.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping you'd be able to, and then we'd have we'd be able to wrap up the show after that, because how would we be able to top that?
I know, right? But no, nothing for me. I want to be older. This has been my week. I just want to be a bit older. I've already texted my mom complaining, and
she should have gotten on that earlier.
Yeah, like if I'd just been born 3 years earlier, I could get a vaccine.
Yeah.
Parents who really love their children did that for them. Yeah,
seriously. Yeah,
that's what I said. But no, anyway, but apart from that, I'm good, thanks. It's good to be here.
Awesome. And it's great to see you, and as always, I love your t-shirt.
Thank you.
Yeah. And last not least, the man with a brand new stealth chair, Muller.
All right, mate, that's I've invested £200 in this.
£200 well spent.
Oh, yeah. Look at it.
You know,
it's a cracking thing.
The smile on your face is like watching a child on Christmas morning.
Oh, mate, I've spent a lot of money this couple of days. And I'm retired. And I've just gone like, the retirement package has got to be hammered. Because you can't take it with you.
That's true. You can't take it with you. So enjoy it while you're still here.
Exactly. I've got a cool thing I bought the other day. The chair and something else. And the wife's going, where's mine? So I had to buy some jewelry today.
Yeah, well, you know, that's how you keep a relationship healthy.
And right? The Birmingham weather report is cold but sunny. And we've had loads of squirrels invading the garden.
Squirrel.
Yeah, squirrel. That's how they are. Those little pimp rats, they're just trouble.
American trouble. As well. Gray squirrels, American bastards. Sorry.
That's all right. I'm not marking the time. So if Ewan has to do any edits, well, I'm sure I'll hear about it. All right. So who has the first story?
Ladies first.
Okay. Then I'll go with that. So we've talked a lot about AI on this show. There's another interesting, let's call it the interesting development. The EU is considering banning AI usage for mass surveillance and for social credit scores, which is a very odd selection of topics to ban on. I mean, surveillance I can understand, but social credit scores, kind of interesting.
Now, okay, so social credit score, is that different from your financial credit score?
Yeah, this is a China thing. Have you come up? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I would say yes and no. I mean, the credit score in the US is also based on, unfortunately, based on some social aspect, like where you live, for example.
Which I was thinking like social media.
Not the more that I'm aware of, but I mean, I wouldn't put it past certain companies using that too. So maybe yes, I don't know.
The Chinese, the social credit system is a method of ranking people based on how nice they are and how well behaved they are and how trustworthy they are and that sort of thing. It's proper dystopian nightmare stuff.
There's an episode of the Orville that's exactly that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Wasn't there also an episode of Doctor Who about that?
Yes. Yep. Where you had an emoji badge that had to wear all the time. Yep.
Yeah. And if you lost too many points, you were killed, basically.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, not that far off. I mean, it's China. So
there you go. All right. I'm sorry, Patrice. I totally took us off the rails immediately with your story. So I hope.
Isn't that what we do on this show?
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing to ban. As with almost every regulation, it's kind of could be a good thing, could be completely pointless, just depending on how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
I think, what was the company's name? There's a company that is using, was it Clearview? It's using AI for like facial recognition.
Could be. I mean, that sounds
familiar. Clear something. Yeah, something like that. In the US especially. So it's being done already. I mean, as we said, China is doing it, but it's being done already. And there is a risk. I'm not sure this is going to stop anything from happening. Like I don't think facial recognition will be worse just because you're not using AI. It might be slower, but ultimately I think the technology and the cameras and everything are so good that it doesn't matter whether it's AI based or not.
The problem that I see with facial recognition, regardless of whether or not AI is involved, is that all of the training that's been done to make the algorithms recognize a face has been very biased. And by that, I mean, it's been trained for white males.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And until that's addressed and you can get facial recognition that's actually reliable, regardless of the color of your skin and how you present or look in general. The whole facial recognition thing is a problem.
That's true, yeah. And I mean, governments are probably one of the biggest users of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not the only users, but the biggest ones.
Right. Yeah. And banning AI use. Okay, so I could see that as a way to try and avoid a lot of the inappropriate tagging of people, and as a way to avoid doing sort of a what was the Tom Cruise movie where they had the precogs?
Minority Report.
Thank you, Minority Report. Mm-hmm. a way to try and avoid going Minority Report. But it doesn't fix the underlying problem, which is the training bias.
Yeah. And from the article, my understanding is that's kind of what the EU is trying to do. I mean, there is this inherent issue with especially facial recognition, but I think in general, they're looking at anything high risk, anything that is used, anything that is AI that is used that could be a risk for everybody and is not properly trained, especially if it's not properly trained. So they're kind of balancing between innovation, which will require AI, I think, but also, yeah, making sure it is, one, it's worth it and it's correct. So, I mean, I can see other fields like the medical field. It's like training AI to detect. Didn't we have a story about that recently?
We did, where AI was being used to do at least some sort of diagnoses, mm-hmm. like heart conditions or something. And it was catching stuff that humans were missing.
Yeah. And in that case, I mean, if that AI was badly trained, it might be awesome for, as you said, white males. Mm-hmm. And then for, I don't know, black or brown or like any kind of color females, all of a sudden it's completely useless. And because people are relying on it, they're thinking, oh, everything's fine. Like there's no issue. Mm-hmm. And in reality, it's just not detecting it. Mm-hmm. So I can definitely see the issue. The EU is putting, or is at least thinking about charging fines if someone breaches that law. $24 million or 4% of the global revenue of the company, kind of like GDPR. It's very, very similar.
Yeah, but have there actually been any GDPR cases yet?
Yes, I'm not sure there have been any like high visibility ones, but there have definitely been some smaller ones.
Okay.
Well, yeah, most companies are smart enough to not deal with that.
Yeah. Oh, here in the United States, it's crazy how many companies are still freaking out over GDPR compliance, and we're in the United States.
I see. I there are so many websites I still can't access because of GDPR. I just get a like a screen. Oh, because of GDPR, we can't serve you. And I'm like, and it's like big news websites where I'm like, I mean, if it was like Jeff Gamet's personal website and you're like, it's a little bit too much work for me for my taste, fine. It's like big news outlets that absolutely could hire like one person to just figure it out.
Yeah, well, and it's not like these companies didn't have fair warning that GDPR was coming.
Oh, I mean, when was that introduced? Like 3-4 years ago by now?
I remember going to seminars here in the United States years before GDPR went into effect so that I could learn about GDPR compliance.
Yeah, exactly. I said, but by now it has been at least a couple of years and they haven't changed it. So, yeah.
Do we still have that then? Does that still affect us in any way? The GDPR thing? Right, okay.
Yeah. We're still aligned with EU at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
when I hear news stories about the EU is sensibly banning this thing that should probably be banned, I think, so I'll look forward to us having that installed here.
Well, I mean, anything new is not going to happen in the UK.
Mm.
I mean, unless the UK government decides it. I mean, the reason that you still have GDPR is because GDPR is in British law.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that's how the EU did all the... almost all the regulations. It's like the EU regulation was put into national law.
Any new EU regulation won't be in British law, though.
Not automatically.
Like this potential AI ban.
Yeah.
No, that won't be. Unless we decide to do it.
Exactly.
But I've got to say that van der Leyden seems to be an absolute, I don't know, pain in the arse. I mean, what's she done now? She's banned. She's actually banned two AstraZeneca and Johnson and Johnson COVID vaccines for what
no,
reason?
No, that's not true. No. She has not done any of such thing. She well, has. AstraZeneca is still being used. For Janssen and Janssen, there is a hold by the governing body for that. The EM, what is it? EMEA? Whatever. The medical board. But it's not her. It's a medical board that has decided, also in the US, by the way, to hold vaccinations of Johnson & Johnson until they have checked out the data. It has nothing to do with the EU, really.
I can find the story. She's basically...
And AstraZeneca, even today, I mean, they're not delivering any, but it's still being used here in Austria.
Well, it should be.
Simply not true.
My wife's a retired nurse, and she says there's six people with blood clots.
That was Johnson & Johnson. But it's not... But the thing is, it's not six people; it's six women. So it's a different group.
Yeah, if it was random,
it was six people. Random people. That would be different.
Since it's all women, even though it's only six.
Yeah, and since those vaccines are so new, it's simply safer to like hold a week or two or even a couple of days, and then continue. Like that's most likely what's going to happen. They're going to check it. That's what they did with AstraZeneca. They checked, they held it for like a day or two, checked it, put like a warning label on the documentation. I think that's why you have to now wait 15 minutes at the vaccination site before you leave to make sure that you don't have any side effects or at least any significant ones. Then you leave and that was it. And then they continue because the benefits still outweigh the risk. But it's simply safer to check it first.
Yeah, and I'd like to point out there are more than twice as many Fast and Furious movies as there are women that had clotting issues because of the Johnson and Johnson vaccine.
Yeah, yeah.
The new one looks awesome.
Well, it does have Helen Mirren in it.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't go wrong with that.
I saw that at the cinema. It was a good film. I mean, it's a turn your brain off film, but it's good.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair... All the Fast and Furious movies are that.
Yes. if you expect plot, then this is not your movie.
Right.
Well, there was a plot-ish.
sort of an idea what they're going to do.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Diesel has to do something that involves driving a car very fast. Yeah. Possibly off something, into something, both, whatever.
Through something,
that's always a good one.
And then go home and see his grandma.
The
Fast and Furious movies have plots in the same way that Godzilla versus Kong has a plot, where you have very flimsily contrived moments to tie together the action.
We came to see the giant thing fight the other giant thing. That it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We don't even really need to know why. Just show them trashing a city, will you please? That was it.
You know, I think what would have worked equally well for Kong versus Godzilla, Godzilla versus Kong, would have been to have no people in it and then hire, is it John Attenborough, to do a voiceover talking about
Richard Attenborough.
Use John Attenborough.
Yeah, I'd pay good money to see that Godzilla movie.
No, still no.
I thought it was pretty good.
Who's the other
giant ape fought the giant lizard? That I was happy with that. That was all I needed. That's what I was.
And the effects were pretty.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've gone so far away from Patrice's story that we might as well move on to the next one. Which looks like Mueller. By the way, everyone that wants to see what stories we're talking about, the links are all in the chat room. And Patrice, where would people find that chat room?
Well, there's a lovely website for that. It is at britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then navigate to the 15th of April, 2021. And you will find the links. And I want to say, I think the Mueller links that he has posted are safe. But I might use them at your own risk. At least the two that I'm seeing here, they seem to be okay.
Okay, so it's safe to say the two links that Mueller has dropped in today so far are safe. Right. But in general, never click any link that Mueller drops into the chat.
Exactly.
Right. All right. Well, that said, Mueller, tell us about your story.
Well, which one are you talking about? Because I gave one to Rich.
Oh.
Well, not that one then.
Whichever one you which want to
talk. Oh, yeah, not the Rich story.
Okay. My story is the last one, which is the self-driving cars. Have you got that one? Tesla. Tesla's brought out the beta of self-driving cars. I think it's only in the US, so if you live in the US... it might be worth staying off the roads for a while.
Well, that's just good advice in general in the United States.
Yeah. Well, the US is probably also the only place where you could do that, where it's like, oh, beta software on like a car that's not driving. Oh, not a problem. Like, what could happen?
No. I think we love that over here. Aren't we using Milton Keynes as a self-driving car test ground?
Whatever. Yeah, but they're not 100 mile an hour super fast sports cars, they're little pods that go about 15 miles an hour.
Yeah, and they're not like Joe Blow, as you would say in the US. Like everybody, like it's not everybody who has a Tesla can now, like wherever you are in the UK, you can just test it and drive around and it's fine. Like that's not how it works.
Oh, this not in the UK,
not in the EU. Yeah, exactly. But in the US, it's like, meh.
Yeah.
Sign a waiver and then like... it's your own risk.
Yeah, and just to be clear, for people that aren't getting just how crazy this is a beta that's being rolled out to car owners. Mm-hmm. This isn't a beta that they're testing with their own cars inside the company. These are people that paid bucket loads of money for a Tesla. And now they're being invited to install beta software on their car, because what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, I mean, as someone who does run a lot of beta software, even I'm saying, I'm not so sure I would try that. That's a little bit too risky for me.
I definitely wouldn't try that.
Especially in the US. You must be the most litigious country in the world.
Yep, that's fair. That checks out. Yep.
So if you actually had an accident in your Tesla, I think you would be in a world of pain.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind, this is the country where a Tesla couldn't tell the difference between a brightly colored overcast sky and a white truck. You know, like a shipping truck, and plowed into it at full speed and like sheared the whole top of the car off and killed the driver inside, who apparently was asleep and was letting his car drive itself.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just once. That has happened multiple times by now.
Yes, and there are also incidents in the United States, and this is before this beta software, where the pseudo self-driving features would just take a Tesla and throw it into the wrong lane, or randomly brake on a high-speed highway, drift right into a concrete barricade between lanes, and the list goes on.
Also where people were basically drunk and the car was driving them home. Drunk or asleep or...
You know, the letting the car drive you home because you're drunk there is a little bit of logic to that, because at that point, maybe the software is safer. Going to be able to drive safer than you.
Yeah, it is probably, I mean, given the track record in general, it is probably safer than that, but yeah, still.
On the bright side, the beta software does park you.
Well,
if you look.
I mean, so there's that.
I mean, yeah,
there are way too many variables on the road to trust beta software with the public.
I think any US citizen that runs this is not in their right mind. That's been it, put it politely.
Well,
I would not run this.
I'm going to be especially careful because I live in Boulder. There are a lot of Teslas here. Also, Elon's brother lives here in Boulder and owns several restaurants in town, and he drives a blue Tesla everywhere. So,
avoid it.
So you can bet that Elon's brother probably has the beta software on his car. And since I see him on Pearl Street often enough, I'm going to have to be especially careful when I go out for walks. Now, I'm not saying Elon's brother is going to try and run me over. I'm not saying he's not. but, you know, beta software. I'm going to be watching out for that blue Tesla.
That is scary. I cannot understand. This would not be allowed in the EU or the UK. There's absolutely nowhere this is ready for prime time, anytime.
No. Yeah.
You know, which is the Stephen King novel where the car tries to kill everybody? Is it Christine?
Christine, yeah.
They can do an updated version of that now, I think.
Yeah, it's
get a Tesla in there.
I have to blame Google for part of this, because why not? I blame Google for part of this, because Google's the company that made the general public not understand what beta software means, because Google has released beta software to the public for an incredibly long time, and let people use beta software in full production environments, and people just don't get the difference anymore because of that.
Your Chrome browser's not going to run you over and leave you on the side of the road.
Yeah. By the way, while we were talking about this, I skimmed this story. This is a story from like 8 months ago, October 2020.
Oh, is it that long ago?
Leave it to Mueller to bring a story that's 8 months old.
That explains why I've been seeing crazy Teslas in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
They've all been using the beta software.
But I mean, I would have to check, but it said at least in an article that it would roll out later in 2020. So there is a chance that this is now rolled out.
Oh, yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you could get it, because when we were looking at, was it the new S series Tesla a few weeks ago? It was an option on the website, because it's a $6,500 option.
Yeah, it has been an option for multiple years. You could basically buy the option to have it when it's released.
Right.
When it's released. So yeah, and they've been racking up the prices for it over time. So yeah.
I got this story from elsewhere. I wonder whether this is an old link, because maybe they put it off because of COVID. I'll try and find the other story, the other one.
Yeah, at least they were rolling it out back then. Like, it was being rolled out to at least this like beta group. So I said maybe it is available now. This link is old.
Yeah. Well, great. So
good job, Mueller.
Now I have to watch out for even more on the road. Thanks a lot, Mueller.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly not available here. There's no way.
No. I mean, you can use some of the features also in the EU and UK, but it's kind of the equivalent of, I mean, it's the old autopilot that you can use here at your own risk. But that's kind of like, that's not autonomous. That's kind of a assistant.
Yeah, the autopilot feature, that's where the guy got cut in half with his Tesla.
Mm. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, at that point, it was the same in the US and in the EU. You can use it, but you're supposed to pay attention. And yeah, if something happens, you're screwed. It's no different than, like, I don't know, the lane assist in like any other random car. If it doesn't work and you crash, it's your problem.
I found another link, and it's actually this year, and it's it's the same story. I don't know whether that one's been dated wrong, but that's the same story, but this year. Maybe
yeah, okay. That's probably the follow-up that they're now expanding the group.
Maybe didn't do it last year.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm interpreting this correctly, from 3 seconds of reading,
which is more than we usually do,
rolled out, and they have currently expanded it tenfold.
Okay.
So now even more people can run beta software on their Tesla.
Yay.
And yet they still can't get CarPlay.
Yeah. I mean, from a software perspective, I can understand this, that, I mean, you want to do beta of your software. And you want to roll it out to as many different people as you can. But there are certain areas where it's probably safer to do that not as a public beta. One would be cars. I think the other would be like pacemakers or something like that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
It's like medical software, like anything that is high risk. Probably not the best idea.
Yeah.
Have you read the other stuff?
Or like autopilots for planes, I'm not so sure about either. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, but autopilot for planes is slightly different depending on your plane. If it's a commercial plane, it actually will land you because it's got other things kicked in. But if it's a I don't know, a £50,000 flying thingy, bought to have a mess about in.
That doesn't even have a land you. It doesn't even have an autopilot.
Probably. All it's going to do is keep you level and make sure you don't crash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even then, as I said, even like doesn't matter whether it's the like commercial version or the amateur version. I don't want to run beta software on that either.
No.
And have you read the story? All you have to do is push a tab on the screen and it installs. Mm-hmm. So you could actually install it by mistake and then go, oh my God, what have I just done? I don't know if there's any rollback.
Probably not.
It's probably like Apple Watch. If you put the beta on Apple Watch and you want to take it off, you have to get a new watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So before we move on, the whole thing with beta and being able to get everything that you can possibly figure out done before it's a public release, you want to have as many people beta testing as possible. So you get as many variations in different circumstances as you can, which I think is why Apple finally started doing a public beta for their operating systems.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a difference between locking up your iPad and having a car that decides that the sidewalk is now the road and just starts plowing through people, which has not happened. That's only a hypothetical that I just pulled right out of my butt.
Totally possible. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of thinking about this and I'm thinking, even if there was a lot of testing done before, at some point, you might want to roll it out to like a select group, maybe just to see, like, you think with, like, I don't know, years worth of testing and all conditions you have. I mean, to some extent, every car has that problem. Mm-hmm. Like, they have new software, they have new systems, like especially nowadays, everything is electronic. They've done their testing. At some point, you have to give it to a select group of people and say, okay, please test this. And I think that's fine. I think that the problem where the problem comes in for me, where it's basically everybody can just push a button and get it.
Yep.
For a car. As I said, like rolling it out to a smaller group and saying, okay, let's like, I don't know, your test drivers, you know what you're doing. Even if the car misbehaves, you're trained to handle it. Okay, fine. But like everybody just pushing a button somewhere, like, and then installing it. I'm not so sure about that.
I'm not so sure about that either. Yeah.
Yeah, but it is a problem. I mean, it is honestly a problem. Like, how do you roll out a feature like that?
Yeah,
very carefully.
Very exactly.
Well, you would think.
Hopefully. It doesn't sound, I mean, that's not Elon Musk, to be honest. So I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, what I would do if it were my company and I was ready to start having some level of public beta testing, I would go down your route, Patrice, where you have a select group. Mm-hmm. And I would set criteria that the beta testers all have to meet. Mm-hmm. And you know, that would be things like you're a professional driver and you have these certifications and, mm-hmm. You know, and then you know, maybe you have to go to the special Tesla beta school.
Yeah, for example, I could definitely see also what Waymo, for example, is doing. I mean, they're rolling out, I mean, they're not doing a like consumer car service, but they're rolling it out basically city-wise.
Mm-hmm.
They have a certain region where it's like, okay, here it's available and you can sign up for it and you can test it. But it's like it was Tempe, Arizona, which is like a very easy to like basically no weather, very wide streets. Like it's kind of easy to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're testing it there. And then they're saying, okay, let's expand it a little bit now and do it that way.
Or team up with a really big company that has a very large corporate campus,
mm-hmm.
and put your cars on the corporate campus.
Oh yeah, say that. Oh, it's a good idea. Yeah, or in general, a big company where you can say, okay, that's like, I mean, we're gonna, I don't know, replace 5% of your cars with that and see how it behaves.
See, Elon should be talking to us. We have
exactly.
come up with best so many better ideas.
Yeah, but I said, it's not Elon Musk. I mean, they're rolling out updates to their software all the time. Sometimes stuff breaks. I've heard things where like, I mean, it does happen. It has happened with other cars too, but I've heard stories where like where Tesla just completely rebooted and stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it has happened to me in other cars. So I'm not saying this is a Tesla exclusive thing. I've heard it more than another. Like there were versions that I rolled out that just, I don't know, every hour or two it would reboot.
Yeah, which is exactly what you want when you're driving down the road.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The blue screen of death, literally.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So so my takeaway is that Mueller has his Tesla on order so he can beta test the self-driving features.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, Rich, hit us with your story.
Okay. Do you want me to put the link in the chat room again?
Sure.
There we go. It's in there. So this is on, it's on XDA Developers. Right. So Phil Spencer of Microsoft Xbox department or whatever, he's been saying a few things that have been in his mind, clearly, about dongles for televisions, because they have an online game streaming service, much like Google Stadia, etc.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming quite well thought of. And they're sort of realizing clearly, yeah, you only need a little dongle thing to plug into your TV to make this work, instead of perhaps a whole Xbox, which kind of sort of defeats the purpose of having the game streaming service in the first place, if you're having to play it on your Xbox. So it makes sense to have a dongle. I could totally see them doing this. This makes a lot of sense.
Makes sense.
You know, The thing about this that is very appealing to me is that if you're someone that wants to play Xbox games, but you just can't afford a full Xbox, maybe you can get the streaming stick when it comes out for a much lower price. And now you're in the Xbox ecosystem.
Exactly. And you're playing those games. You've got all your save games on there. Maybe you've got a PC as well. And there's Xbox games you'd like to play on there. All kinds.
Can you even Switch?
Yeah. See, I could, do you know, as well as seeing them do a dongle, I could see them just making this an app on smart TVs. Because why not? It's just streaming a video.
Exactly. What do you, it's a little bit more than streaming a video, but it's not much. Like, I mean, what do you need? You need some kind of Bluetooth controller or something so that you can connect your controller to it. And you need just enough power to drive, I don't know, a big enough TV at like a decent frame rate.
It depends what they're talking about. A dongle, though, are they talking about like the Android dongles that have quite a lot of processing power?
Well, I've got for Stadia, it's a Chromecast Ultra, which is about that big, and it's just this dinky little thing, and that will do 4K content at 60 FPS. I don't know what Stadia promises at the top end. I've never seen it.
Nowadays I would probably expect 4K 120 hertz at I don't know 60 FPS. I'm hearing from a lot of gamers what they expect. But even as I said, for that, like, I mean, the bandwidth that you need to stream that is
Your biggest problem with that kind of thing. Yeah. You need a spectacular internet connection for that to work
but
well.
Other than that, I mean, the stick doesn't have to do much. So it's just passing through the information.
And I mean, we're overlooking the other problem of you can't buy an Xbox today. I'm looking right now, or a PS5. You're absolutely right. The only place I can find where I could order one right now is CEX, like Muller mentioned. And they're selling a PS5 for £720.
Holy crap.
And an Xbox Series X is £600.
I'm looking at Amazon in the United States right now.
I went into my local CEX that normally has lots of even the older Xboxes and PlayStations, and they had nothing. They'd gone, all of them. And they had, I would say before lockdown, there was always about 10 of them in the window or in the cabinet, and there isn't one left. So obviously they've all been snapped up.
I mean, so yeah, a PS5 at CX is £720, and for reference, they are $449 recommended retail price.
Wow.
So yeah, they should do.
You can't even get one on Amazon.
I should look at, so £600.
But you can get a PS4.
Yeah.
That won't play games in a few months' time.
It's not that bad. It's gonna work. It's just not gonna play the latest and greatest.
Is that do you mean the CMOS battery thing?
They're turning aren't they turning off the ability to buy games?
On the PS3.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Oh, is it the PS3? But
yeah. To be honest, I don't know why they don't just keep stuff up forever, but it might be licensing deals, or it might be much more of a headache to maintain than it is in my head. Why don't they just keep that store up forever? I don't know what that costs Sony to run in terms of resources. It might be ridiculous.
My guess is that there's a threshold where you have to have enough users to justify the cost of having the server. And when your user level drops below that, then they cut it.
Yeah. It's not the server cost. That kind of scales.
Minimal.
That scales probably mostly linearly. It's the maintenance costs. It's not the running the server. It's like maintaining the server, maintaining the software, doing at least like maintenance patches of like security flaws or whatever. Like even if you're not doing anything else, but you still at least have to make sure it's secure, that costs you money.
And the other thing in this article that Phil Spencer also said was hinting at the idea of subscribing to a higher level of Xbox Game Pass, which would guarantee access to new hardware at release.
Interesting.
So we are actually getting to a point where companies are looking at charging us to later have the ability to buy something.
I did run a story months and months and months ago on this show where they were talking. I think the US has a system where you can actually lease Xboxes.
And I was wondering, you at least pay monthly for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, it's not available here. And I can see that coming in because, and that would, you'd have everything would be involved in that. So the machine wouldn't be yours. It's like my Virgin box downstairs that I do not own any of the hardware, but it provides all my TV and all my internet. And if I stop paying for it, they'll take the machine, they'll take the hardware away. It also is great. It's great because if it breaks down, they just replace it. So
I can definitely see that for professional gamers. I mean, kind of like using your Mac or your PC for like businesses, which is actually tax wise, especially much cheaper and much better because you just pay a monthly fee for it, and at the end of the time, you just send it back and get a new one. I could see that for professional gamers being very attractive. They pay just a subscription for the box, and whenever the new one comes out, they get a new one.
And it's a business write-off.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, I like that.
I think it'd be good for, if you're on a subscription and you want to pay for the games anyway, and the hardware is involved, I think it'd be very attractive. And I can see people would be snapping that up. If Microsoft could provide the hardware, I reckon that would be very, very good. Because what you'd say, if the hardware doesn't belong to you and it breaks down, then Microsoft sends you another box and you carry on, and they send that back and they can repair it.
Yeah. The other big advantage, which is kind of the same on the smartphone side, is that the month-to-month payments. That is, especially for those devices that are quite expensive and quite a big upfront cost. It's kind of attractive to say, instead of paying, I don't know, what is that, $700 that we could say, for like a PS5 or $600 or whatever, upfront you're paying, I don't know, what is that, $30 a month? For 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
But Microsoft are also talking about bringing in a tiered system for the Game Pass. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what that involves, because it's still, you know, pie in the sky. So that could be interesting. So you won't maybe get the top tier games in the one, but get all the old stuff, and or you can pay monthly. I don't know. Yeah. That'd be interesting. Yeah.
I'm just looking at it. I would so do this if they bring it out here. And it's, what is it, $34.99 a month, and you get an Xbox Series X console and 24 months of Xbox Game Pass. And then you do own the console at the end of it. You're just paying for it for 2 years.
That makes sense. 0%
APR.
Yeah. Barrier of entry is lower. More people are going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
God, we agree.
You and I hope when you see this part, you're sitting down, because all of us actually agree on something. All right. Well,
and we sound like we have even an idea what we're agreeing to.
That is the show story. We all agree.
There we go. We finally all agreed.
We finally all. That's even better.
All right. My story is about the Ingenuity helicopter on Mars. So the plan was to have it do a test flight maybe on the 10th or the 11th And it turns out that they found a software problem in the initial tests once it got dropped off the belly. And yeah,
I mean, are they running beta software?
Yeah, well, you would think maybe.
Maybe they should have rolled it out to more helicopters first.
Right. Yeah, what were they thinking? Sending a beta helicopter to Mars? That's expensive. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow, they can fix the problem. And the problem is that going from standby mode to ready for flight mode, they found a problem with the transition. Mm-hmm. And it's just a software issue. So they've been able to work on the software fix. And of course they have another helicopter here on Earth, so they can do their initial testing here. And then they're going to upload the software to the helicopter. So they're going to do a wireless software update from Earth to Mars to a little helicopter that's just sitting on the ground in the middle of a crater.
Hope they don't break it.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
Oh, somebody turned the power off.
and the developer says, well, it worked on my machine.
Can the people who do that go and work at Apple and make it so that when I add an album to my library in Apple Music, it actually does it?
No.
Those people who are just sending software updates to Mars.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all working for JPL.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should put your library on Mars. Maybe then it works.
I need to put it somewhere other than Apple Music. That's for sure.
Okay.
All right. Set up a Plex server.
More on that later.
Awesome.
Ooh, okay. Teaser.
Story.
And if you want to talk Plex server stuff with me offline too, I'm totally game for it.
We
should totally do a whole Plex
chat.
We
have a Plex room.
Yeah.
There's a Plex room.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We have the Plex room. What am I saying? Yeah. Anyhow, so that's it. I just think it's really cool that once I identified the software bug, that they were able to figure out how to fix it, and they're just going to upload upload software wirelessly from Earth to Mars.
Yeah, I think that's something. I mean, they've been doing that for years, and it's something that was kind of planned, especially for the helicopter. I read that they didn't know how it's going to work on Mars because the atmosphere is so different that they had some very educated, very smart guesses how the helicopter would fly. But until they've done it, I mean, that's why they're doing the test flights. Until they've done it, they don't know exactly how it's going to work. It might not fly at all. So I think they planned for having software updates in general anyway, because they might want to change things around to try to test other things. Like if they realize that, I don't know, it's not working the way they thought it would, that they can change the software and do it differently, for example. Mm-hmm. So as I said, I think that's something they've learned in the past. Like I know a lot of like the rovers got software updates and didn't they fix bugs even in like, was it Hubble? I mean, there was a hardware issue, but I think they also fixed some software glitches there. Like they've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah. Well, when they did the Hubble fix for the lens that was out of focus, they had to put a new lens in. But for the telescope to actually be able to take advantage of the new lens, it needed a software update. Mm-hmm. So they replaced hardware and software at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, that was slightly easier because if something went wrong there, they could send someone there with a USB stick or even a computer to replace it. Mm-hmm. So it was slightly easier. But it said, I, as far as I know, they've been doing this for a long time, sending software updates to other places. I know that like the system that they have to even install new software is like really crazy. It's kind of, they have kind of, as far as I've understood, they have like redundant systems. And they kind of install it first and then test it and only make it active once they have verified that it works. Mm-hmm. If not, the old software just stays.
And see, this is a totally valid situation for running beta software in the wild.
Yeah, it's true.
If it doesn't work, Tesla. Yeah, exactly. If you want to run your beta software in the wild, go to Mars.
Yeah. Tesla, Apple, Microsoft. There's so many companies who should be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think to some extent they are, but yeah, still not good enough. I think that's what I'm pretty sure Android does it too. I think that's what iPhone is doing to some extent nowadays. It actually like installs it first and then checks it and only like moves it over when it's has verified it works.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's not buggy, but at least it's not buggy because it was installed wrong.
Right. And and Apple even did a thing a few years ago when they were doing their major switchover for the operating system, where they did an update where they actually pushed the entire update out, switched over your iPhone to the new software to see if it would work right, switched it back, and then killed the update.
Yeah, that was APFS. When they switched APFS. They did like a test update to APFS and then switched it back.
Yeah, and no one knew until Craig Federighi said, the thing he said at the WWDC you and I were both at, Patrice?
Yeah, I think that was the one.
Yeah, he said it in Gruber's show.
Yeah, smart people.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, I'm super excited about this helicopter. As I said, it's an experiment. It might not fly at all. It might crash. It either way, we're going to learn something.
Right. Yes. So no matter what happens with a helicopter, the test is a success because we're going to learn so much from whatever happens.
Yep. I mean, they've already proven that they can fly it to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And like, unload it basically. I mean, no. It was a payload, but I mean, they like successfully put it down on the planet. Like it's there and it still works. It's still in one piece. Fall apart or anything.
And they were able to turn the blades.
Yeah. So as I said, it's already a success as far as it got.
I think I know why it didn't fly. The Martians said it was too close to the airport.
That would do it. Yeah, they have restrictions on drone flight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
makes sense.
Far too close, and they were flying over a Martian colony, and they went no.
Mm-hmm. No, can't do that.
Yeah, the problem is probably not like the helicopter itself. There's like a little Martian standing on it and holding the rotor.
He's just put his finger on it.
He's like, guys, watch this. This is gonna be funny.
Yankee, go home.
Yeah. Hey, this show and all the others on British Tech Network is sponsored by TSO Hosts in spite of us. No, seriously, TSO Host is awesome. And what they're doing is making it possible for us to be here. Without their support, we literally would not be on the air. So they're providing us with the hosting and the bandwidth that we need to make these shows happen and to make sure that they're there so that you can go back and find episodes later. And they're absolutely awesome. And what you can do if you need to get a new domain, you need some hosting, hit them up because they'll take advantage of giving you a good deal. And one thing I've been remiss in mentioning in the past is that they have a discount for BTN users. And if I had listened closer last week to what Ewan said, I could tell you what that discount is. But I was like, oh, really? I've never paid attention to that before. Anyhow, so they're showing us some love by giving us discounts as users. And so we should return the favor and give them some love too. What they would love is for us to go to our favorite social medias, give them a shout out and let them know that we appreciate them and we appreciate what they're doing for the British Tech Network. So go do that. They're awesome. Thank you, TSO hosts, for being there for us. And we are also sponsored by Iman Max, and that's the company that's going to fix your Apple gear for you, even if it's out of warranty, especially if it's out of warranty. And instead of just saying, oh, it looks like there's this one little problem on your logic board for your Mac, so we're just going to throw the whole thing out, put a new logic board in. No, they'll go and actually fix that one failed component for you. And I made a joke one day on the show about Callum, who works there, replacing a capacitor. And he's like, oh, that's easy. And whatever, capacitors, that's nothing. Yeah, so they can fix your Apple gear, no problem at all. And Patrice, they've worked on a Mac for you. Mueller, they replaced an SSD for you.
Yeah, on this computer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And if I were closer where it would be practical for me to get two iPads to Iman Max, I would have Cal replace the batteries for me because I would trust him to do it. I just don't trust the shipping system to get two iPads from the United States to the UK and back intact. Yeah, but you know, maybe if I can get out for the Big Bash at some point, I can arrange with Cal to have my batteries replaced while I'm there.
He could replace your capacitors.
He could replace my capacitors. Mm-hmm. That's right. and they will give you a discount too. So just mention British Tech Network when you go in to get your gear fixed, or if you're looking to buy used equipment that comes with a 6-month warranty, hit them up for that too. They're awesome. We love them. Thank you to TSO hosts and thank you to Iman Max for being here for us. You rock. And it is now time for the cool thing. Patrice, what do you have for us?
So I'm going to pick your podcast. It's one of my favorites. It's, I want to say it's tech related. It's not always tech. And the podcast is called Darknet Diaries. What they do is they have, I would say, relatively short-ish, like 30 minutes or so episodes about cybersecurity or any kind of security topic. Actually, 69 minutes, so it's not 30 minutes. The last episode, for example, was about a lady, like she's a social, what would be called social engineer or people hacker nowadays. She has very little technical skills. She has like her skills are more to convince people to do things that she wants them to do. And it was like it's very interesting to hear about those kind of jobs. One of the like previous stories was, for example, about the, was it 2016? I think the hack off or where like a group in, I think they called the Guild of Grumpy Old Hackers. Yeah, there it is. That in 2016, they used basically the LinkedIn breach to get into Donald Trump's Twitter account, which was completely insecure during like the election campaign and everything. So stuff like that, and then disclosed it obviously and so on. And they tell the stories about that. And it's just super, super interesting to hear all those kinds of different people working on different things. There was one like security researcher, like one of the recent episodes I talked about, like how they figured out what a certain, I mean, one, how they even found a certain malware, and then how they figured out what was doing. And that it was who it was targeting and so on, like also the geopolitical part of it, which, I mean, in this case was very interesting because they were in Israel. So it's kind of a mix, as I said, between, it's not too technical, like it's not like getting the computer science degree to understand what they're doing. It's very well made for like lay people, but it gives you a lot of insights into how people in that business think and how and the stories behind it. Is that the there was like an entire series about the LinkedIn breaches and how that was tracked, like how they figured out what happened after and what happened basically from that LinkedIn breach, like the secondary and tertiary breaches that happened because of it, because people just tried the passwords that were leaked at other services and all of a sudden they had access to that and so on. And how that was used to access others, like to access Twitter accounts, for example. So it's just a very, very interesting podcast. I really enjoy it. Every time it comes out, it's like top of my queue. And as I said, I have a computer science degree, but I don't think you need it. Need some technical understanding in general, but I think that's like our audience here is technical enough for that.
I listened to it.
Cool.
So it must be all right.
Yeah. Did you understand it?
Some of it. Good. I mean, the last show with the Liverpool woman, I mean, that's the kind of stuff I could do. Yeah. I mean, all she was doing was blagging her way into places.
Yeah. I mean, she had some physical access, like skills. Like she knew how to like open a door and stuff like that if she had to. But it was kind of a last resort for her. Like she would rather convince someone to let her in than like trick or like break the system itself.
The Dutch guys, though, when they hacked Trump's account,
yeah,
they didn't really do an awful lot to do that. They just looked at...
Yeah, that was the crazy part. they didn't have to do much.
And then they shat themselves because, oh, God, we've actually done it. What are we going to do? Oh,
they thought it was harder than it actually was.
And then they went, we better tell someone. Let's tell Trump. And he ignored them. And I was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they had to go through the Dutch government, basically, for them to reach out to the US government to even get a response at all.
Oh, my God.
And Trump at the time was saying, you have to have an IQ of 140 million to hack someone. Yeah. And they did.
What was his password? I don't remember it, but it was something ridiculously simple. No, MAGA, you're fired. Something. No, you're fired.
Your fire was the first one, but the other one was MAGA. MAGA.
Yeah.
I think it was MAGA 2020.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because they broke into him twice, didn't they? They broke into him before
They tried to confirm that it was fixed now and figured out that it still wasn't.
You know, well, at some point, someone would have enabled two-factor authentication on his account. Just saying.
You would think, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. But the first time they did it was when he was going for presidency. Mm-hmm. That was make America great again. The second time was when he was going for re-election. That was the MAGA one. And it was, and he was going off on one, and they were going like, "We broke into your account. Listen to us."
Yeah, that's a super super interesting story. Like, is it technically super easy? You and I could have done that kind of. I mean, yeah, I think they used a VPN.
Just
and that was
the password.
Guess the password and use a VPN, and that was it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, know how to disclose it properly. Maybe that was important too, but. There's probably, like, I don't know, an app for that.
Yeah,
I'm
assuming
so. Has anyone been monitoring the chat and seeing Coyote pop in?
Yeah, said they're a Geek Shed administrator, and but they've left the chat.
He did like one of my links.
Yeah, see, that's what happens. Don't click Mueller links, because then we end up with server administrators popping up on us.
But he did say it was a false positive.
Yeah. So, but I can see why he would assume. Anyhow, Rich, what do you have for us?
Yeah. This week I've been discovering that I've been beginning to discover the delights of PlexAmp, which is a Plex app dedicated just to music. Mm-hmm. So I've been running a Plex server for years. I love Plex, and it's great for when you've got a lot of media that you acquired from various places over the years.
From all those discs that you bought.
Yes, all those discs that I bought. And traditionally, I use it for films and TV shows. But I've been, as I vented a little earlier, been having a bit of annoyance with Apple Music. And I've kind of started realizing, well, I can just start ripping CDs. I have a CD collection. I'm old enough for that. So I can go and start ripping these CDs and putting them on Plex and then start streaming them to my phone through Plex Amp. This is the ideal way forward. And then maybe I just need I think I'm still going to need a music subscription service to sort of fill in the gaps. There's mm-hmm. a lot of stuff you listen to that I don't want the whole album. I just want that track and that kind of thing. But this new Plex app, I don't know that it's new, actually. It's new because I heard about it this week, but that means nothing. It's actually pretty good. And unlike apps provided by other music service providers, it actually seems to work, which I can't quite get enough of. It's such a novelty.
I've heard from some people that are into high bitrate mm-hmm. audio.
Yeah.
That they use that.
Well, that's the other thing. I'm ripping to FLAC now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all a bit huge, but I haven't got that many CDs and space is much more cheap now than it used to be.
mm-hmm.
My only downside to it is that my Plex server is running on my main PC. So I have to leave that on all the time. So I'm now thinking, this is clearly what I need a new Raspberry Pi for.
I'm running my Plex server on a Raspberry Pi.
You just sold me another Raspberry Pi then. I think I think maybe the Pi 4B and the 4 gig kit will probably be enough.
That's what I'm doing. So I have a 4B. And actually I had an extra USB hard drive just sitting in a drawer unused, and it's like a couple terabytes, and I'm like, okay, that's more than enough for what I need to do right now. So Raspberry Pi 4B with an external USB hard drive, and it just sits right over here on my on a shelf, and it works well enough that not only can I use it to stream content to my television in my living room, mm-hmm. but I had a friend that had to spend a week in the hospital several months ago, and in the hospital, even over the hospital Wi-Fi, we were streaming movies from my Raspberry Pi and playing them in the hospital. Not a problem at all.
I need to do this then. I definitely need to do it. I'll let you all know how it goes, but I'm going to do it. Plex server on a Raspberry Pi and just leave it on a shelf. Forget about it.
It's great. I periodically SSH into it from my iPad and run software updates.
Cool. Well, I actually, on that subject, there is another Plex app, isn't there? That I also found this week called Plex Monitor, which will just show you the status of your server and how much bandwidth it's using and run updates on it and all that kind of thing.
Nice.
I'm getting into Plex. I even bought the pro subscription.
Yeah, I've got a pro subscription, but I run it on a Mac Mini.
Yeah, Plex is really cool. And I put it on my Raspberry Pi just as an experiment to see how it would work. Because I figured, worst case scenario, now I just have an extra hard drive loaded up with music and movies.
So you've got a Plex Pi.
So now I have my Raspberry Plex, I think that's what I called it, on my network, and it's awesome. And after I had it set up and saw how well it worked, I thought, I really should have done this earlier.
Right. Definitely so doing this so much. Trying not to buy one right now.
Just go ahead and do it.
Don't say that, Jeff. I don't need that level of encouragement.
Yeah,
Ewan's got some old Mac Minis you can buy off him, I reckon. He's got loads of them.
Yeah, but a Raspberry Pi, it's really cool to say you're doing it on a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, and it's the tininess, and that, I mean, this will run off a little 5 volt. Yeah, comes with a 5.1 volt 3 amp power supply.
But you still need to connect some storage to it.
That's true, but that I already have that storage.
Yeah,
I'm just going to unplug
it's already there.
It's all on an external hard drive, so I'll just move it from the PC to the Raspberry Pi.
There you go.
And that will be much cheaper to run than the 600-watt PC it's plugged into at the moment.
Yep.
Which I'll then be able to turn off at night and stuff like that. So it'll be good.
You're going to love it. Yep. Cool. All right, Muller, what do you have for us?
Well, I put my link into an app, but I bought myself, I'll show the box. It's a bit dark now here. I've got a Garmin, and it's a bike computer. I bought the Explore version because I'm not interested in testing my, training and all that. So I just wanted one that did basic, navigation and recording my speed and where I've been. But I teamed it up with an app called Komoot, which I think is on all sorts of platforms, including iOS, Android. And Komoot is a German app. And when I connected it, I didn't realize I could actually turn it into English. If you go to the app, if you go to the website, there is a way to turn it to English. But I've got a working knowledge of German, and I actually managed to plan a few routes on the maps and download it to my Garmin. What you have to do, you have to save the off the thing, and then you drag and drop it in via the app onto the Garmin. And if you're into cycling but you're not into serious training, I would say this Garmin is excellent. It's the Explore, the Edge Explore, costs about £300, and it's color screen, nice navigation, saves the battery on your iPhone when you're cycling, and it uploads to all if you've got a pro account to like Komoot and one or two of the other things, uploads all your stats without you having to use your iPhone or Android phone or whatever phone you want to use. And I've enjoying it at the moment. I've only had it a week, but I'm already in love with it.
Nice. And you're out of focus now. I have to say, you've never looked better.
Wait, I'm going.
He's out of focus.
I've gone full doc.
Or maybe you're finally in focus, and I just didn't realize how you really look.
Oh well, yeah, I'll try and turn another light on because I got my hue controller here. When it let's turn. No, that's the wrong one.
All right. Well, my cool thing is actually you can see it right here. It's a
Your
new
face.
Mike Boom arm that I just got, and it's the Blue Compass, and this boom arm is just so nice. The boom arm that I was using up until a couple days ago, actually, it's probably exactly the same arm that you have, Rich, which
All right.
works great. It's like, like a $15 arm.
That's the one.
Yep. Yep. And it works great. But this one, it is so smooth. The joints on it, and when you move it, and it looks really nice. And you can see right up here part of the cord coming off the microphone, and it kind of disappears. That's because it's going into a cord channel that's built into the arm.
Very nice.
It's very nice. And
yeah, very nice.
It attaches
very nice
with a with a clamp that's really solid, attaches to your desk and moves really smooth. But it also comes with another piece so that if you want to permanently mount it to your desk, it tells you what size hole you need to drill in the desk. And then you put this piece in your desk, and then the arm just sets right into that. And now it's just permanently part of your desk, and it looks really nice. So mine's just clamped because that's the best way for me to attach this, and absolutely love it. It's $99, and I am loving my new Mike Boom arm.
Yeah,
it's also one of Lego.
It's also one of the like the best investments, I would say, for a podcaster, for anybody doing anything with audio, like more than, I don't know, a couple days, like a month. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best investments you can have because it just makes it so much easier to work with your microphone.
Yes. And while my old mic stand or boom arm was nice, this one, I don't have to tighten and loosen the thumb screws for the joints to mm-hmm. move it, because the joints here, like, you know, here's one of them, they're actually held in place with tension. So you just move everything and it stays where it needs to be. And you can adjust the tension on the backside that, which you can't see here. There are little handles that are built in, and you just twist and loosen or tighten to change that tension. Really nice. So I'm very happy with my new mic boom arm. All right, we've made it to the end of another show. Amazing. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, they can always find me every week here on the Big Show and also on the Mac Show. Everything I do and all the social media links and whatever, whatnot, you can find on thepatrice.com. And my podcast is The Foodie Flashback at foodieflashback.com, where I probably will try to edit a new episode over the weekend, and maybe next week there will be one. And awesome. You can stay tuned because it's very interesting. It's Mike Rose.
So I'm looking forward to it.
That was a cool episode. I can definitely recommend that. So stay tuned for that.
Awesome. All right. And Rich, where can people find you?
You can find me on earlymorningbarking.com or on the YouTube channel Early Morning Barking.
Awesome. And Muller, where can people find you?
Winding up the admin on Geekshed and on Twitter and in the Slack room and on here occasionally.
Awesome. All right. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I am Jay Gamut both places. Also, you know, my cool thing last week was the Lego space shuttle kit. Well, my schedule's been so crazy, I haven't started building it yet. But I asked on social media if people wanted to watch me build it, and it turns out yes. So I'm going to do a live build on Twitch. I'll do it in sections. Oh, yeah. So there'll be multiple episodes, if you will, and then save those to YouTube for people that want to watch later, and then maybe turn all of that into a time lapse so you can see the whole thing get built really fast. So that's coming very soon, and I'll make sure that I let everyone know in Slack so that if you want to tune in and watch, you can. And wow, thank you to all of you for being here. What an awesome panel. And I've had so much fun hanging out with you today as your Ewan by proxy. Everyone that's watching live, thank you for being here and participating in the chat room. It's absolutely awesome to get to hang out with all of you too. And for everyone that watches or listens later, thank you for tuning in. Every one of you rock. And I will be hosting the Mac show tomorrow because Ewan's schedule does not allow him to be here for that. So I will see everyone again tomorrow. And wow, thanks for being here. And we'll see you again next week.
Different, there might be a greenie sighting. So.
Ooh. Well,
I don't invite him often, but.
It was fun awesome. When he's here.
You can control him.
Not sure you can.
No, see, Greeny is always our wild card. Mm-hmm. And I say that with love. And what I love is that he's always going to have something to contribute. We just don't know what it is until it happens. And that's okay. That's putting adventure into our lives.
So it's me then.
Okay.
Right. The difference is you don't have extra watches or left shoes to sell us.
No.
And actually, you haven't sung for us on the show yet.
Oh, you don't want that.
That's true.
But Greedy has.
Yeah, but you don't want me to sing.
Yeah, well, used thank to get you for me not to, singing.
Well, when I used to run a pub when I, oh, well, God, in the 1980s, and I used to sing to get the customers out.
Well, whatever. They just did not appreciate your skills.
Well, to be honest, we used to do illegal, in those days, the pubs in Britain used to have to shut at 10:30. And last orders was 10 o'clock, drink up 10:30 on your bike. Hmm. But I ran a pub. This is before I joined the police. And my pub used to shut at about 2, 3 a.m. Or when the police knocked on the door and said, you're taking the piss. But as half of West Bromwich Police Station used to drink in the pub, I didn't get raided very often.
It's good to know people.
It's always good.
It's just when we got, well, luckily I did, the pub wasn't situated in a residential area. It was all metalworks and smelting places in those days. So that when the Black Country still had places that melted metal and bashed it to bits. There's not many of those places left now. It was in a place called Wensbury, if anyone's listening.
And someone will be like, oh, I remember the pub. And I remember the guy that sang so bad.
Well,
I used to go there at like 2 a.m.
Well, they probably would know me, actually. I was the only person in that whole pub that didn't have a tattoo. And then there was one day, there was this is the worst thing, is that I think it was a Saturday night. I didn't go home that night. I was going to sleep upstairs. And the only thing we used to sell loads of was Nuki Brown bottles. If people in Britain know what Nuki Brown is. And there was a murder outside. Someone got killed. The police came in and closed the whole pub down and wouldn't let everyone out till they contacted, got everyone's details. And then I lost the license.
And then I
imagine that.
Then I lost the license.
Yeah, that's probably a good place for me to turn off the live stream.
Oh, yes.
Right, oh, I have to shoot off, but it's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah, I'm going to have some food now.
Yeah, it's been fun. Sorry I got us started a little bit late, but hey, you know, my computer wouldn't cooperate, so there we go.
You know what? I was super happy that it started late because I was running late and it was like, phew.
Oh, well.
Not just me.
I'm glad I could arrange everything like that for you.
I think I started my tea at 8 o'clock. So.
Right.
It's a good show.
Take care.
It's really funny.
Mm-hmm. All right, see you.
Anyway, bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.